This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America, an update on the race for the White House. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton becomes the first female presumptive presidential nominee of a major U.S. political party as she captures enough delegates to clinch the Democratic nomination.
Thanks to you, we've reached a milestone. The first time in our nation's history that a woman will be a major party's nominee.
Weeks ago, Donald J. Trump became the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party. By week's end, U.S. President Barack Obama had heartily endorsed his former Secretary of State, saying he didn't think there had ever been someone so qualified to hold this office. Obama's full-throated backing of Hillary Clinton came on the same afternoon that he met with Clinton's Democratic challenger, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. It is hoped that the president's endorsement would end concerns about party unity after a long and intense battle between Clinton and Sanders. After his meeting with President Obama, Sanders addressed reporters outside the White House, saying he hopes to meet with Clinton soon to, quote, discuss how to defeat Trump, unquote. Sanders added that Trump would, quote, be a disaster of a president of the United States, unquote. Hillary Clinton addressed supporters in Brooklyn, New York, shortly after her decisive victory in the New Jersey primary contest last Tuesday. In a bid to appeal to Sanders backers, she underscored the need for closing the gap between the haves and the have-nots. She also mocked Donald Trump's vow to build a wall between Mexico and the United States.
We all believe that America succeeds when more people share in our prosperity, when more people have a voice in our political system, when more people can contribute to their communities. We believe that cooperation is better than conflict, unity is better than division, empowerment is better than resentment, and bridges are better than walls.
The state of California was the biggest delegate prize of 2016 for Democrats. Even though Senator Sanders spent the better part of the past month camped out there, Clinton beat him by about 13 points or nearly 500,000 votes. According to analysts, the Democratic coalition will ultimately unify behind Clinton because the liberal base does not want Donald Trump to become president. And Clinton benefits enormously from growing concerns among independent voters about the presumptive Republican nominee. But on the eve of last Tuesday's primaries in California, New Jersey, Montana, New Mexico, and North and South Dakota, Donald Trump provided a glimpse of how he intends to campaign against Hillary Clinton. He will attack her character and tie her to what he calls the Obama disaster.
America is getting taken apart piece by piece, auctioned off to the highest bidder. We're broke. We owe $19 trillion, going quickly to $21 trillion. Our infrastructure is a disaster. Our schools are failing. Crime is rising. People are scared. The last thing we need is Hillary Clinton in the White House or an extension of the Obama disaster.
That was Donald J. Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee, speaking last Tuesday evening. Well, with us to discuss the state of the race for the White House and the run-up to the Democratic and Republican conventions in July are two distinguished political analysts. John Fortier, a regular at these microphones, is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. That's a policy group based here in Washington. And Olivier Knox, he's chief Washington correspondent for Yahoo News. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Carol.
Thanks.
John Fortier, let me begin with you. Your take on this last week.
Well, we finally have two nominees. They still have to go to the conventions. Hillary Clinton has now officially declared the nomination because she's got, with the superdelegates and the delegates she's won, she's going to be the nominee. We've known that for a while, but it's more official now. Donald Trump continues to have ups and downs. Politics is an up and down business, but Donald Trump has bigger ups and downs than most. And Donald Trump, who had a week or two ago been looking better, had consolidated much of the Republican base, at least in polls, and it had some sense that the Republican establishment, many of them were coming to his side, has stepped in some controversy again, especially with his comments about a judge relating to his business, the Trump University, and made some comments that many Republicans in Washington found offensive. And again, he's on the defensive because of this. So, you know, Donald Trump is doing well in a certain way from an outsider perspective, but I think we'll always be Donald Trump and have these up and down moments, and the party, especially the establishment, is having a hard time unifying around him.
Turning to you, Olivia Knox, for your take on the state of the race.
Well, you know, one of the interesting questions now is whether and how quickly the Democratic Party closes ranks behind former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Barack Obama's endorsement was absolutely not a surprise at all. He has basically been endorsing her periodically in interviews since at least January. He's never made it a secret that he considers her his rightful political heir. But what this does is it allows him to start getting into actual campaign mode. We've seen Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton sort of team up unofficially before. Last week, he gave a big speech defending his economic record. She gave a speech attacking Donald Trump's national security stances and his temperament. Those are the top two issues on voters' minds. It felt very much like a coordinated assault. But now the president can really actually go out and do political events. Democrats are very, very much counting on him to win over Sanders voters and to try to rally his winning coalitions from 2008 and 2012. There is some thinking that some number of Bernie Sanders voters will rally behind Trump. We don't really have great data in terms of how many, what proportion. And of course, some number of Sanders supporters will probably stay home in November. But the Democrats are counting on Barack Obama and on near universal dislike of Donald Trump among Democrats to close ranks and unify the party before the elections.
Back to you, John Fortier. So how much of an effect will Obama have on this election now? Will he be able to bring the Bernie Sanders voters to support Hillary Clinton and his own very diverse base to clinch the presidency for Hillary Clinton?
Well, I agree with Olivier generally that the president now is more free to really go forward and support and campaign for Hillary Clinton. I do think the Bernie Sanders supporters are going to come along probably relatively naturally. It takes a little bit of time after you run a tough campaign. You get to the convention, you need a little time to settle down, but you look at the opponent on the other side. The one thing I would add is the president is actually doing better in public opinion polls than he had been 6 months ago. Partly, I think he's been out of the fray of politics. You know, he's still a relatively 50-50 president. His numbers have crept up closer to 50%. They were maybe 45% 6 months ago. You know, he's certainly popular among his base. The one thing that any candidate like Hillary Clinton does have to worry about, though, is she wants to be her own person, and she's, of course, well-known to the American public. But at some point, the president will have to step back. And just like when Al Gore ran, Bill Clinton had to figure out how much he would be out on the campaign trail. And he was had some perhaps more problems than Barack Obama does. But she can't run a campaign where she is just simply seen as Barack Obama's successor. She's going to be more her own person. And I think, you know, there'll be some tension down the road as to how much the president gets out there and how much Hillary Clinton is taking the lead.
Turning to you, Olivia Knox. Continuing on Hillary, she has to become her own person. You know, she has changed quite a bit because of Sanders pushing her a bit more to the left. She was actually for some free trade agreements like the TPP before she turned against it, probably because of Sanders. So the question is, will the fact that she's a very well-known politician, a female who has been in the White House, has been a senator, Secretary of State, will all of that somehow offset some of her negatives or unfavorables? And she is also the ultimate insider in the year of the outsider.
One of the least covered and most interesting stories of the 2016 presidential cycle is how Hillary Clinton, from the outset, recalibrated a lot of her positions. Much more successful way than, say, Jeb Bush on the Republican side. She moved to where the party has come since her husband's presidency. She's been recalibrating on gay rights, on trade, on a lot of issues. It's not just because of Bernie Sanders. It's because the party, frankly, on a lot of issues, had drifted left even before he mounted his surprisingly strong presidential race. The second thing is, the other defining dynamic of this election is how disliked both of these nominees are. Her problems, I think, are twofold. One is that poll after poll shows that even among Democrats, she suffers from what you might call an empathy gap. People don't think that she cares or understands their concerns. The other one is a trustworthiness gap, where a lot of independent voters said that they don't trust Hillary Clinton. Those are big problems. What we are going to see is a really brutal campaign. You can already see it now, where each side does more attacking of the other candidate than they do holding up their own positions.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier, political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Olivier Knox. He's chief Washington correspondent for Yahoo News. We're discussing the race for the White House as Hillary Clinton captures enough delegates to become the presumptive presidential nominee of the Democratic Party. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to a loyal fan from Benin City, Nigeria, Ifioto Odozi. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, John Fortier. A brutal campaign, as Olivier Knox said, is in the offing, obviously, between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Clinton has dubbed him temperamentally unfit to be president. She said that in her speech last week after she won New Jersey. By the same token, as you said earlier, Donald Trump has even come under fire from Republicans for remarks about this judge, Judge Curiel, whom he said was biased and a hater of Trump because of his Mexican heritage. It would render him unable to preside over a case with regard to Trump University. Even Senator Mark Kirk, a Republican senator, previously endorsed Trump, now has rescinded his endorsement over those remarks and others. Lindsey Graham, senator from South Carolina, Republican, has denounced Mr. Trump over these remarks, said that here's an off-ramp for Republicans who maybe want to rescind their support. So talk about the challenges for Donald Trump going forward, because he's even alienating some party stalwarts.
Well, I would add to your list, even people like Jeff Sessions, a senator from Alabama, who is really one of Trump's strongest supporters, has really pushed Trump to back off on these comments about the judge. So Donald Trump has, over the course of the last year, said things that most people thought were disqualifying in politics. And we've all declared him politically dead, and then he's seemed to survive this. So I think we're not going to see a different Donald Trump. We're going to see moments like this where he gets himself in trouble, but he also has some strengths. So the party had been unifying around him. The voters had been relatively unified more than expected as soon as he wrapped up the nomination. And he was getting slowly some support. Paul Ryan and others, professionalization of his campaign. But I still think he is Donald Trump. He's an outsider. He is who he is. And we're going to have these moments. And that's something that worries many Republicans. There still is an effort to deny him the nomination. It's not very realistic. Perhaps to glom onto a third party again, I don't think very realistic. But there's division in the Republican ranks. And that's not good for Donald Trump. I think we'll have to see a little bit how this shakes out once the conventions are over, where I think the Bernie Sanders supporters will come back to Hillary, what the polls look like then. But despite all the problems that Donald Trump has had, at least now, he's not doing so badly in the polls. I think he's still probably not the favorite to win this race, but is somebody who has greater strength than the establishment and the commentary would usually suggest.
So turning to you, Olivia Knox, for your take on Donald Trump, his shortcomings, as we just talked about, but also strengths. On the other hand, the primary campaign is very different from the general election campaign. We have a much wider and diverse electorate that could hurt him, perhaps. What are your thoughts?
I think John's point about Donald Trump's volatility, his higher ups and his lower lows, I think is really important. The effort to professionalize his campaign, I think it's dead. What you're seeing instead is you're seeing the Republican National Committee, in other words, the party, start to build voter turnout and messaging operations in the states that will decide the election. You're seeing the Republican National Committee do fundraising that will yield money that will help Donald Trump, but it's not being done in Donald Trump's name. You're seeing Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, lay out an agenda on issues like poverty and national security that has two purposes. One is to allow Republican voters to essentially cast their ballots as Ryan Republicans and not as Trump Republicans, while also trying to smooth the rougher edges of Donald Trump. For instance, his call to build a wall along the border between the United States and Mexico, there are references in the Paul Ryan blueprint to tightening the border and enforcing immigration laws more aggressively. On a couple of the other issues, the Ryan blueprint does that same job of, on the one hand, trying to mainstream what animating principles might be, but give Republicans a chance to run as something else than just supporters of Donald Trump.
Well, back to you, John Fortier. Sticking with Donald Trump, let's look at the demographics that it would take to get him elected. Most analysts are saying that he primarily appeals to white voters, less educated, lower income males. Stu Rothenberg, a well-known political consultant here in Washington, asked this question in an article that he wrote. The most important question of 2016 is, can Donald Trump turn out enough white voters to beat Hillary Clinton? So what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that's a good question. We've had long-term demographic shifts. If you remember, after the 2012 election, the Republicans did a kind of autopsy of the Republican Party and said, look, the growing groups in America, Hispanics, certainly younger voters for the president and the Democratic Party, are moving in the Democratic direction. Republicans have strengths in older voters, white working class voters, but those groups don't tend to be growing. So certainly over the long term, Republicans have to figure out how they'll put together a majority. And that autopsy thought that greater appeal to Hispanics, greater appeal across the board might yield that. The party obviously doesn't control who the nominee is, and Donald Trump is actually doubling down on the other part of that demographic shift that's been going on, and that Republicans have over time been doing much better among the white vote. Mitt Romney got about 59% of the white vote, very, very high percentage, and that is a trend that these, back in the Reagan years, we called them Reagan Democrats or conservative white Democrats, have been moving to the Republican Party. The question is it possible that Donald Trump will be able to pull together a coalition that doesn't look like what Republicans were talking about in 2012, this broader coalition, but really doubles down on the white working class vote? He clearly has some appeal and will bring in some new voters. The worry is that he will lose some voters in the traditional Republican coalition, and it might be a wash and not enough to win.
Turning back to you, Olivia Knox, looking at the demographics for Donald Trump. Now, of course, you recall in his speech last week after the number of primaries, he even reached out to Bernie Sanders supporters, knowing that they don't have any love lost for Hillary Clinton. Now, this was before President Obama gave her a full-throated endorsement. Nonetheless, what's the prospect of him attracting some of these disgruntled Bernie voters? Of course, there's the other drawback that the very demographic that the Republicans would like to appeal to, Hispanic population, he has certainly done some damage there with his critical remarks. What's his path?
Every campaign I've ever covered features candidates who reach out to the other side. The Republicans will say that thoughtful Democrats are welcome to vote for the Republican candidates. Democrats say that patriotic Republicans are welcome to vote for Democratic candidates. Hillary Clinton is now starting a project to try to enlist Republicans. John's absolutely right on everything that he said. The demographics are enormously difficult. Donald Trump would have to really outperform Mitt Romney among white voters. The problem there is something we touched on in the preceding question, which is whether he and the Republican Party can build a campaign apparatus that does this. They face really daunting odds in terms of building the kind of turnout operation and messaging operation that traditionally a presidential candidate in the United States would be building themselves and therefore would be directing themselves. I mean, we're going to hear more and more stories about the Republican National Committee, the RNC, fighting the Trump machine over messaging. I guarantee it. I think it's an enormously heavy lift for Donald Trump, but it's not impossible. You know, we have a fairly tribal political system in the United States. Republicans will vote for Republicans, Democrats will vote for Democrats. You mentioned Mark Kirk earlier. What's notable about him is he's a vulnerable Republican sitting senator. He's one of a number of people who won in the midterms of 2010, which was a bit of a wave election for Republicans. It was the first midterms of the Obama era. A lot of voters rejected the Democrats. The problem, though, when you win in a kind of wave election, is that you benefit from the enthusiasm of that cycle. And you may not have the same enthusiasm 6 years down the road.
I will add that he is also from a very Democratic state. In fact, he holds Barack Obama's former seat in the U.S. Senate. So he is a Republican running in a Democratic leading state. And so for him to be worried about Donald Trump a little more than the others is not so surprising. It's when the further into the party and to the right that there are grumblings that I think Donald Trump has more to worry about.
And of course, we have to continue to underscore this sense of concern about Hillary Clinton, this lack of trustworthiness, not only among Republicans, but also among Democrats. But a well-known Republican, Senator Lindsey Graham, who has disavowed, I guess, support for Trump, has said, will love of country trump hatred of Hillary? So we have these polarizing candidates. So let me put that question to you, John Fortier. Or will Donald Trump, trying to make this a referendum on Hillary Clinton's character, win out? How do you see it?
I think their traditional conservative wings of the Republican Party on foreign policy and economic and social policy, who all have some problems with Donald Trump. So it's not just he's alienated the moderates in the party, and Lindsey Graham and John McCain and others who are a little more supportive of him, but come from a wing of the party that wants to be out there in the world, the neoconservative wing of the party. And no, that's something that Donald Trump has some different views on. So I think partly it's that his views, and he's been able to bring along a lot of the Republican voters with him, surprisingly, against what some of the elites want, are potentially a different kind of coalition for him. I still think it's very tough. I think both of us agree that crafting this slightly new coalition, bringing in white working class voters who might be independents or perhaps some Democrats and losing some other voters and still finding a winning coalition is difficult. But you know, the two things about Donald Trump are, one, of course, how different he is and how bombastic and outspoken he is, but also just what kind of different coalition that he's running this coalition a little more with white working class voters, with anti-immigration message, anti-trade, anti-interventionist and foreign policy. And those are things that some of the conservative parts of the Republican Party are having problems with, as well as the more moderate parts.
Well, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee, has so far retained his endorsement of Trump, but he says, I'll give him about 2 or 3 weeks to straighten out Olivier Nock. So again, on the other hand, we're going to hear a speech from Donald Trump next week excoriating Hillary Clinton on foreign policy. He will certainly do all in his power to tear her down and make this a referendum on her character. So how do you see this playing out?
So Bob Corker said that in an interview with me. That was my story.
All right.
The problem is, or what, Senator Corker, right? I mean, you give him 2 to 3 weeks to fix the campaign, or what? What are you going to do? What are the levers you have to change Donald Trump's behavior? Realistically, there aren't any. To me, this was more a signal to the rest of the electeds and the establishment in the Republican Party to say, like, we have to give a serious look at this candidate and decide whether we can line up behind him. I don't think it really was a message to Donald Trump saying, here's a calendar. You need to be a presidential statesman figure within the next 14 days, or else some unspecified bad thing will happen.
As we wrap up, so Olivia Knox, quickly, Clinton has a lot of problems, perhaps in the coming days, the email server question, other attacks by Donald Trump with respect to the Clinton Foundation. How serious do you think these charges will be, and could something come out to really derail her candidacy in this regard?
We have 5 months of campaigning ahead of us. It's going to be bruising and blistering, but they each have a problem that there are nonpartisan landmines for each of them. She has the problem of the FBI's investigation into her use of a private email server for the totality of her time at the State Department. He has lawsuits, fraud claims against him for this Trump University real estate scheme that he had. So they each have a problem, which is that there's other, at least notionally impartial, part of the government that could really blow up in their face. That's different from a partisan attack. So I think she faces some real problems. If the FBI comes back and recommends an indictment, I think it would be more likely to be one of her senior aides than her. But we shall see. I agree with John that we're not going to see a real independent bid. Just that structurally, it's very hard to get on the ballot in America if you're not from one of the two major parties. Let's see whether the Libertarian Party has its best year ever. Former Governor Gary Johnson is their presidential candidate. He's polling at about 15%, if I'm not mistaken, which is higher than ever. He could qualify for federal matching funds. He could qualify for the presidential debates. This could turn out to be a really interesting and fun part of 2016. This party that is on the ballot in, I think, 33 of the 50 states, how are they going to shape this conversation? When those wary Republicans go into the voting booth in November, are they going to look at Gary Johnson and say, well, maybe this is a good none of the above, meaning not Trump, not Hillary?
Well, the last word to you on that very question, John Fortier. What about Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party candidate? And where will some Republicans, perhaps, who are disenchanted with Trump, turn and independents? Which way will they go?
Well, I think the never Trump forces have been struggling for vehicles to stop Trump. And this may be the one of the better ones. I don't think it's actually probably that likely. But Libertarian Party is, as Olivia says, on the ballot already. There's some rumblings that the Koch brothers might actually put some money behind it. If somebody put some serious money behind that and it became a vehicle for Republicans who were worried about Trump, then it might make a difference.
Well, on that note, be sure to tune into VOA coverage for the Democratic and Republican National Conventions this July. That's all the time we have on on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, John Fortier, political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Olivier Knox. He's chief Washington correspondent for Yahoo News. Thank you, gentlemen, for your terrific insights.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Rob McLean. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.